We continue today with lesson number 56 in our study of Mishnayos Meseches Kelim. Today, we will learn the last Mishnah of the 14th Perek and begin with the first Mishnah of the 15th Perek. So we will study Perek Yud Dalet Mishnah Ches and Perek Tesvov Mishnah Aleph. We begin with Mishnah Ches, the very last Mishnah in the 14th Perek. As I indicated toward the end of the lesson yesterday, the Mitzius, the realia, R-E-A-L-I-A, of this Mishnah requires a knowledge of the type of locks which were used in the time of the Mishnah. There are various approaches to how the various Meforshim imagined or knew these locks to resemble. It's possible that the same types of locks were still in use in the time of the Rishonim, let's say, Rambam, Raivat, and maybe even in the times of the medieval Meforshim, Tosfos Yom Tov, etc., Bar Tanura, and maybe even in the 19th century, times of the Tiferes Yisroel, etc. What's interesting with this Mishnah is the diagrams provided to us by Rav Posen, of Moshe Eliezer Posen from England, to which I've been referring and which I use in my own study of Mishnayos Kelim and other mesechtos which require illustrations. Interestingly enough, as a prologue to this Mishnah, the introduction to the diagrams that he provides, Rav Posen mentions that he sweated, worked very hard to figure out these Mishnayosin and to imagine and then draw, sketch these various primitive locks. He was guided and aided, he says, by museums which he visited, in which he could actually see such locks, primitive locks, which archaeologists identified as being from the time of the Second Temple of the Bais Sheni. It's impossible, I think, in words to describe what these locks resembled. And according to Rav Posen, there are two basic approaches to this Mishnah. One is the approach of the Rash and the Bar Tanura, according to the Gaon, as explained by the Tiferes Yisroel. We will not attempt to explain that approach in this lesson. The other approach is that of the Rambam, the Oruch, and the Rabbeinu Chananel in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Pei Aleph. And we will try to follow that approach. In order to understand this approach, you have to imagine the door from the inside. And the door was basically locked, held closed, and unable to be opened by a horizontal bolt or latch, which moved horizontally from the center of the door into the mezuzah, into the doorpost. If that bolt was in the doorpost, then the door was unopenable. You couldn't open it. If the bolt was removed from the doorpost and just suspended alongside the width of the wall, then there's no problem in opening the door. From the inside, you can just manipulate this bolt with your hands and move it from left to right, from right to left, as you need it to open or shut the door from the inside. From the outside, it's a different story, because how are you going to get into it? Well, what they did was they had a hole in the door through which you could insert a kind of a key, and a key which was shaped in such a way that it was bent, so it resembled a knee, K-N-E-E, and you would insert that, and that would help you move the bolt. However, what's to stop anybody, including a thief, from making himself such a knee-shaped key, poking it into the hole in the door, and moving the bolt any which way he wants to? So to guard against that very possible scenario, above the bolt, above the horizontal bolt, was another lock in which had a vertical, much smaller bolt, really not much more than a small peg or thick nail, which, when it was released, blocked the bolt from being able to move. And when it was raised, would allow the bolt to be moved. And here you had a second opening on the outside of the door with a key shaped kind of like an L. But if you imagine an L, the base of the L would be the handle, the horizontal base. And along the right side of the vertical part of the L, letter L, capital L, there were teeth protruding. So it was a key with a handle. The horizontal base of the L was the handle. The vertical part of the L had protruding teeth, and these teeth would match the inside of this upper apparatus, so that when you turned that key, you could raise the spike or nail or vertical bolt in such a way that it will allow the horizontal bolt to be moved. So you have two different kinds of keys, one shaped like a knee, one shaped like a gum. A gum is the Greek letter gamma, which kind of resembles an L with those protrusions. Imagine something like a G, a capital G in the English alphabet, but instead of the left side of the G being rounded, imagine it to be vertical, to be perpendicular to the ground. Two different types of keys. One, which would open the horizontally placed bolt from that's inside the door, and the other key, the gum key, which would allow you to manipulate a vertical bolt, which either kept the bolt from being movable if it was descended, but if it was uplifted, it would allow you to move the bolt. So when you came into your house from the outside, you first used the gamma L-shaped key to lift up the vertical bolt which was inside the door, holding the horizontal bolt in place. Then you would be able to insert the knee-shaped key into the lower hole, which will allow you to manipulate and to move the horizontal bolt to the left or to the right, as the case may be, to open or shut the door. With that background, tried my best. Again, the best thing to do is to procure the book of diagrams of Rabbi Posen and follow only his, for our Mishnah's purposes, only his first approach, which is in the booklet that I have on pages 38 to 40. And then the Mishnah kind of flows along quite simply. Mafteach shel Arkova, or Arkuva. If you have a key shaped like the knee, K-N-E-E, shenishbar mitoch Arkuva so, it's shaped like a knee, so it's kind of bent. If at the point at which it is bent, it is broken, then all you have now is two vertical, useless metal objects. Can't open the door with them. So therefore, this mafteach shel arkova made of metal, if it's intact, it's a functional and necessary item, and it's mekabel tumah. But if it's broken at the point of which the two ends of it were connected, So now the two ends are no longer connected. And instead of having a knee-shaped metal object, you have two straight rods of metal. Tohor, it is not mekabel tumah, because you can't use it from the outside to get into your house. However, Rabbi Yehuda metameh, Rabbi Yehuda holds it is mekabel tumah. Bipnei shehu posteach bo mibifnim. You can take these simple rods and use it to manipulate the latch or the bolt from inside the house, if you're inside. So the Tanakhama says the key basically is not made to manipulate the latch and keep the door closed from the inside. Of course, you can do that, and sometimes you want to do that. You don't want people coming into your house when you're inside. But basically, the function of the key is to get into the house for you, the housekeeper, to get into the house from the outside. And this broken key is useless to get into the house from the outside. So therefore, they say it's not mekabel tumah, it's useless. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it does have a function, not the primary function of getting into the house from the outside, but a secondary function of closing the latch from the inside. And therefore, he holds it is mekabel tumah. Vishel gam, if you have this key shaped like a gamma, like a G, basically, again, it's the letter L. And the vertical end of the L, from the vertical end of the L, moving to the right side, there are protrusions. The protrusions are called chofin, or teeth. And the protrusions alternate with holes in the key, which are called nekovim. So, vishel gam shenishba mitoch gumo, imagine an L-shaped key, which is broken at the point at which the vertical and horizontal parts of the L come together. So now it's just two sticks. One stick happens to have teeth protruding from it. The other stick has nothing protruding from it. But either way, it's useless. Tohor. It's not mekabel tumah. However, ho yubo chofinu nekovim, if the vertical part, let's say in our example, one part of that L has teeth and holes in it in such a way that it can be used somehow to poke into the lock, where these teeth and holes will fit into the lock. The teeth will fit into the holes in the lock, and the holes will be filled by the teeth in the lock. So then, desperately, you can somehow, even without the handle part of the L, insert this rod with the chofen unekovin into the door and spring the lock. So therefore it's tomei, it is mekabel tumah. Nitlu chofen, if the teeth are removed, they're blunted or broken off. Tomei, it is still mekabel tumah, mepnei nekovin, because you can somehow manipulate it using the holes to match the holes in the key to match up with the chofin, with the teeth in the lock, and spring the lock. Not easy trick, but it can be done. So it's tome. Tome b'nei nekovin. Nistatmu nekovin. Suppose the holes are filled up, stuffed up, so the holes don't function. It's still tome b'nei chofin, because the teeth might function, and the teeth may be able to be matched and placed into and inserted into the holes in the lock, which are receptacles for the chofin in the key, and therefore it is mekabel tumah. However, nitlu chofin v'nistatmu nekovin, if you have this key, this broken part of a key, which not only is it broken off from its handle, but the teeth have been removed, blunted, and the holes have been smoothed over, eroded, filed down. So then, of course, it's not absolutely useless. So it's not mekabel tumah. O sheportzu zelatoch ze. Or if the holes now have combined with each other. So there used to be a hole, then a tooth, then a hole, then a tooth. And now one of the holes expanded and met up with the other hole, completely rendering useless the previously intervening tooth. So partsu zelatoch ze, it's just the holes are all over the place, and it is useless, and it is not mekabel tuma tohor. Similarly, masnenes, a strainer shel chardol, which is used to strain mustard seeds. So you have a sieve, S-I-E-V-E, through which you can pour these mustard seeds and drain out from them anything smaller than a mustard seed. And you have, so the sieve, of course, has many, many, many holes. Shenifritzu bo shlosha nikovim milimaton zelitokse. Suppose three of the holes now are pierced in such a way that they are combined into one big hole. Tahora, it's no longer mekabel tuma, this masnenes, because it lost its function. It no longer can function as an effective sifter or strainer or sieve, because the holes are now, at least one hole is too large, and some of the stuff you want to retain in the strainer will not be retained. It will fall through that large hole. So it's not functional, and therefore tahora is not mekabel tuma. V'ho afarkes shel matchos, and a kind of a funnel, which was one of the components of the primitive mill, and one would place the kernels of wheat in this funnel, and they would come out of the narrow end of the funnel bit by bit by the mill. This afarkes of metal, temeya, is mekabel tuma, because even though it's part of a larger apparatus, it is an independent vessel on its own. And indeed, as the Rambam points out, it has its own name. It's not called part of the Rechayim, part of the mill. It's called afarkes, and therefore it is a vessel in its own right, and it is mekabel tuma. And so we have completed the 8th Mishnah of the 14th Perek, and in the process we have completed the 14th Perek. Now let's begin the 15th Perek with Mishnah Aleph. You may recognize Mishnah Aleph because it is a repeat of a Mishnah which we studied way back when in the 2nd Perek. Now we've concluded basically the major treatment of metal kalim, and we're moving on from Perek Chamisha Osor, from the 15th Perek, until the 19th Perek, including the 19th Perek, where we will deal not with Kli Cheres, which we're already experts about, and not with Kli Mateches, Kli Matchos, which we're already experts about, but with wooden vessels, leather vessels, and metal, and vessels made of bone. So the Mishnah says, Clay eights, wooden vessels, clay ore, leather vessels, made of animal hide, clay etzem, vessels made of bone, clay zechuchis, or vessels made of glass, pshutehen tahorin. If they are pshutim, meaning flat, no base kibul, they can't contain anything, they're just tabletops or platforms or trays with no base kibul, are not mekabel tuma, tahorin, umekableyen. But wooden, leather, bone, glass vessels, which have a base kibul, cups, saucers, drinking glasses, etc., are mekabel tuma. However, nishbiru, once they are broken, tahoru, they become tahor. Meaning, if you have a kliyetz, etc., which has become tome, and then it is broken into bits, those bits are tohor, A. And B, if you have a kliyet which is tohor, and it breaks into bits, those bits are not mekabel tuma. That's the meaning of nishbiru tohoru. Two meanings of nishbiru tohoru. Chozavi also mehen kelim. Suppose you take these fragments and make new utensils of them. Mekablin tuma mikan ulahabo. The new vessel is mekabel tuma from this point onward, but it does not revert to its original tuma. So if you have a kliyetz, a cup made of wood, it can be mekabel tuma. A sheretz falls into it, dead sheretz, it is now tome. Break it into bits, the bits are tohor. Put the bits together and a new kli, the nuclei is not mekabel tumah. It's tahor, and of course it can be mekabel tumah in the future, but it's not tomei now. It does not revert, as is the case with metal vessels, to its original tumah yishona, to its original previous tumah. It is only mekabel tumah mikan ulahaba, from this point forward. Now, the Mishnah lists a number of very large kelim, as we will see just how large they are. Wooden kelim, generally. Hashida. Hashida is some type of a large box, a trunk of some sort. Vahateva, a box. Vahamigdol, a closet. Migdol means a tower, because these type of closets were shaped like a pointed roof, like a tower. But basically, it's a large closet. Keveres hakash, or a beehive made of straw, which really means any large container made of straw. Straw, of course, is eitz, is wood. It's for our purposes. Vichaveres hakonim, and similarly, a beehive made of rods of sticks, or again, any large basket or whatever made of sticks. Uvor sfino alexandris, and the large reservoir, wooden reservoir, which is made for the ships of Alexandria, meaning sea-faring ships, where you had to have a large supply of fresh water. So on the ship there was this huge bowl of wood in which fresh water was kept. Sheyesh lohem shulayim, in all these cases, if there is a bottom to them, then, and if vehein machazikin arboim sa'obalach sheheim korayim biyovesh, if they are so large that they can contain 40 sa' of liquid, which means they're large enough to hold two kurim, which each kur is 30 sa', which is 60 sa' of yovesh. So if you would load them with peanuts, you could load 60 sa'. If you fill them with grape juice, they only fill 40 sa. It can only contain 40 sa because of the godesh. The peanuts can be heaped up above the top of the rim, whereas, of course, the liquid cannot be. It will just spill over the top. The main thing is we're talking about a very large wooden vessel, so large that it's the size of a mikveh. It can contain 40 sa of liquid. And 40 saw is estimated to be about 500 liter, L-I-T-E-R. Then, hare elu tahorin. They are not mekabel tumah because they're so large. And the reason is because the Torah tells us in Vayikra Yud Aleph in Parshas Shemini, Perek Lamed Beis, Perek Yud Aleph Posuk Lamed Beis, the Posuk reads, Mikol Kali Eitz, wood, O beged, cloth, O or, leather, O sack, or sackcloth. So, all of the materials that we are studying about in our Mishnah are compared to sackcloth. And a sack is something which, by definition, is moved around from place to place. It is what's called mistaltel, or mitaltel, mole virekon. It's something which can be moved when it's empty and moved when it's full. You have a sack, of course, you can move around an empty sack, but you can also move around a sack of potatoes. So too, wooden vessels, bone vessels, etc., are only mekabel tumah if they can be moved around, like small boxes and small suitcases and small cups and bowls and pots and whatever. But if they're so large, as the list that's being provided here of a Sheda, Teva, Svina, Alexandris Bor, etc., then they are not Mekabel Tumah, because they are not Mistaltel Mole Virekon. They are cannot be moved around. They are stationary objects. Usha'or Kal HaKelim, any other vessel not on the above list, Bain Mekablin, whether they are so large that they can contain 40 liquid sa'a, b'nei no mikablim, or whether they're smaller than that, t'meyin, they are mikabel tumah divrei Rav Meir. So holds Rav Meir. In other words, Rav Meir says, you want to know, any wooden vessel out there imaginable is Mekabel Tuma, I don't care how big it is, except for the ones that I listed. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda and has a different approach. Rabbi Meir gave you a list of those vessels which are not Mekabel Tuma because they're so large and they're not Mistaltel Molei Vureka. Rabbi Yehuda, just the opposite. He gives you a list of those utensils made of wood, large utensils made of wood, which are large kelim made of wood, which are not Mekabel, I'm sorry, which are Mekabel Tuma. Rabbi Meir gives you a list of those which are not Mekabel Tuma because they're too large, they're not Mitaltel Molei Vereka, they're not Mekabel Tuma. Rabbi Yehuda now will give us a list of those which are Mekabel Tuma because they are domeh, they are similar to a sack. In that, they can be moved, and they are moved customarily, habitually, regularly, from place to place. What are those? One is Dardur Agolo. This is kind of a large barrel, which is placed, a rounded barrel, which is very large, but it's attached to a wagon, and therefore it moves around. It's a large tank on a barrel, on a train, on a flat car of a train. So it moves from place to place. So no matter how big it is designed to function mole v'rekon, empty and full. And similarly, v'kustos hamalochim, the large trunks which are appended, attached to the coaches of kings. So that's normal and regular when kings travel, royalty travels, they have a trunk of some sort attached to their coach, which is moved from place to place. Va'arevas ho'abdonin, and also the tub, the large tub of wood, which is used by tanners, people who tan, T-A-N, hide, they use these large tubs to soak leather in them. And these avdonim, since they are professionals who need to move from place to place, this areva, as large as it is, larger than 40 saw, nevertheless moves around, is designed to be moved from place to place. And similarly, ubor sefino ketano, the reservoir, wooden reservoir for a small boat, which is not a seafaring boat. It only goes on the Kinneret, not on the Mediterranean, which is designed to hold water for a short tourist cruise for an hour or two. So it's small and therefore movable from place to place. Viha Oron, which is a smaller closet made of wood, which is designed to be moved from place to place. So in all of the above cases, Afal Pisha Mikablin, even if it happens to be that this Oron, or Bor Svino Ketano, or Arevo Shel Abdonim, or Dardor Agola, etc., are Mikablin, are large enough to contain 40 liquid saw. So they're large. And you might think, therefore, they don't move around to Mayim. No, they are Mikabel Tuma. Why? She'enon asuyin litaltel, because ella b'mashe betochon, because they are only designed, I'm following the Rambam now, they are only designed to be moved around when they are full. So they are designed to be moved around, not only are they designed to move around even when they are full, but they are designed to be moved around mostly when they are full. It's only a full wagon or a full closet that the king or prince wants to have with him and the coach. It's only a full tub that the Avdon uses. It moves around. It's only a full bor svino katana of water which you take on a little tourist ride around the Kinneret, etc. So therefore, it is Mekabel Tuma because it is similar to a sack. It is mitaltel mole v'rekon. That's the Rambam's explanation, and there are other explanations. Look in the Tosfos Yom Tov for one of them. Usha'or kol ha'kelim, but Rabbi Yehuda continues, anything that's not on the list that I gave you, which are mekabel tumah, is not mekabel tumah. Ushor kalakelim, anything else you can imagine. Hamekablim, if they are large enough to contain 40 liquid saw, tahorin, they are not mekabel tumor. V'she'enam mekablim, if they're not so large, they can't contain 40 liquid saw, temeyin, they are mekabel tumor. What's the difference between Rabbi Meir, who gave us a list of those kalim which normally are not moved around and therefore are not mekabel tumah, versus Rabbi Yehuda, who gave us a list of those kalim which, as large as they are designed to be moved around even when they're full of their contents, which are mekabel tumah? What's the difference between Rabbi Meir, whose list is of those things which are not mekabel tumah, and Rabbi Yehuda, his list is of those things which are mekabel tumah? What difference is there? Only one difference, the Mishnah says. Ein bein divrei Rabbi Meir divrei Rabbi Yehuda elo arevas balabayis. The only difference between them is when it comes to a tub, an areva, not used by a tanner to tan hide, but used by a plain old homemaker who occasionally shechts his little goat and takes the hide and wants to make something out of it. So he has a small tub. So Rabbi Meir, who gives a list of those kalim which are not mekabel tumah, is teaching us that only those are not mekabel tumah. But arevas bal habayis would be mekabel tumah, because even though it might be a very large one, it is still mekabel tumah, according to Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Yehuda, because it's not going to be moved around, only the professional avdon is going to move around his tub, making it roi lekabel tumah. But the arevas bal habayis, even though it is machzekes arboim soa balach, will not be moved around. And I'm sorry, will sometimes be moved around, and therefore it is mekabel tumah, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, who gives us a list of those kalim, which even though they are large, are mekabel tumah. He teaches us that only those are mekabel tumah, but the arevas bal habayis is tahora. Again, Rabbi Meir gives us a list of those kalim which are not mekabel tumah. He excludes from that list the arevas bal habayis because he holds that the arevas bal habayis is mekabel tumah, even though it's so large. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, I'm giving you a list of those kalim which are mekabel tumah, and I am excluding from my list the arevas bal habayis because I hold that is not mekabel tumah. It is a stationary object, according to Rabbi Yehuda, not designed to be moved about, and therefore it is not mekabel tumah. And so we have finished the first Mishnah of the 15th Perek, and in the process concluded lesson number 56.